One day.
Gentlemen, and welcome to Empire State Reptiles Live. My name is Chris, and I have the ultimate pleasure of being your host, just like I was last week, and just like I was the week before that, and just like I will be next week. So everybody knows what's up with that. So today we're sitting down and we're talking to Jay Brewer from Prehistoric Pets. Now, Prehistoric Pets is actually a reptile, I'll consider it a reptile superstore located in California. From anybody that's in California, you should definitely go check them out. But let me tell you, they have dedicated their lives to these reptiles, opening up a store that will replicate all these natural habitats for the reptiles and everything like that. As well as he does have a little superstar that he owns from Disney's the hit show, Jesse, Mr. Kipling. So we'll definitely make sure we'll get into that. I know that some people were interested in learning more about the actual animal and just not what's portrayed on TV. So we're going to jump into it and we're going to get into him and ask him some questions. So we'll be ready to talk with him right now. Good evening, Jay. How are you doing?
I hear a little bit of cutout. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear.
So, I didn't quite hear all that for some reason.
Okay. So, how are you doing? If you would
excellent.
Mind telling us what you do. Yeah, if you would mind telling us what you do and get into it.
Yeah, basically, this is like my hobby turned into a company. I actually started off as a little kid that collected reptiles and had fun out. You know, I mean, what I basically did is play out in the backyard and catch animals and catch little lizards and little snakes. And eventually I started trading them for more exotic stuff and raised some rodents. And later in life, when I started to actually, you know, got old enough to have a job and everything, I was able to purchase a little pet store that I turned into. It's a real abbreviated story, but but basically
okay.
I was able to start. I bought a pair of albino. Actually, my first snakes were Indian pythons. I was really my favorite snake. They're an endangered species, and they're really pretty. And got some albino Burmese, and off I went, and eventually changed my business from a fishing business into buying a small pet store. And the small pet store was called Pet Country. And then I started, kind of got in deep really fast with selling kind of exotics and rare stuff that people weren't getting too much of. I had a lot of friends and that either had really rare animals for the most part, and or I had friends that worked at a zoo that bred animals that had surplus animals, and I started selling different things. And then there wasn't even a morph market back then, to be honest. And over the years, things have changed a lot. In the last 30 years, a lot has changed.
Yes.
There wasn't even an albino anything, really. There was just a few corn snake morphs that were, I don't even know the beginning of the corn snake morphs, but, you know, back then it was all about the rarity, like Indian pythons and Argentine boas and Dumeril's boas, and they were all considered very rare at that point. So
wow. If you
wouldn't
mind telling us, what do you specialize in? I know you brought up pythons, so
We're always kind of morphing ourselves out, to be completely honest. When I started out, it was just a pet store. Then the first Gulf War caused a major economy crisis, and selling of the snakes was not enough to support us. So we started going into the birthday party business, and we slowly kept changing and morphing into a different company. So like now we literally have a zoo. We do birthday parties. We do YouTube. We do a little bit of everything, but our specialty is reticulated pythons. That's my personal passion.
Okay. Yeah. So, I'm going to jump into the callers earlier. I know I saw, 11111, I saw that on my switchboard, so I'm not sure if you're calling from a black number, but you actually dropped it several times, so I'm not sure if that was you ending the call or whatever, but everybody knows the number. But if you're new, that number is 713-955-0793. Once again, that is 713-955-0793. So you talked about getting into the birthday party business, so were you just trying to educate people on the different type of reptiles?
It was a need and a desire to do both, and it's worked out really, really well. The birthday parties are really popular. We do a lot of birthday parties, schools. We've done malls all over the United States. We've done Philadelphia State Fair, Pennsylvania State Fair, Oklahoma State Fair, California State Fair. We did Orange County Fair probably 25 times, 22 times.
Wow.
We've done a lot of fairs, and usually there were a lot of times all the state fairs were usually like sponsored, so we're paid to go. But it gives us an opportunity. They bring us in for like Chevron brought us in a lot of the times, and they would finance the overhead for it, and then we would promote the reptiles and do shows each in between them. And we also did a lot of hands-on photographs and a lot of hands-on, because we're really a hands-on company. We don't feel like it's, ideal to be behind glass. We like to be with the public, touching, feeling, asking those questions, and learning. So that's kind of what we are all about. We don't want to be just a zoo or a, museum type thing. We want to be more involved with the people and, directly involved.
All right. So how did you even get into reptiles in the first beginning? I know you opened up Pet Country.
Well, I think honestly, I got into reptiles originally when I was young because I really had nothing else I could do. I was very poor. I was in a single parent home with my mother had passed away when I was four. I was adopted and in the first place, and we were just kind of poor. So everybody else would be playing with their toys, or sometimes I'd be with them, but sometimes it'd be too early, and I'd go out and look for snakes and frogs. And my dad was older, but he would still take me to irrigation ditches at night, and I'd jump the fence and catch frogs and do all that kind of stuff. It was just, I was kind of always adventurous and never just, couldn't just sit around. So just the way
all
I've
right.
always been.
So we're going to get into our first caller. It's 305 Kevin from Florida, I think he said. So,
yeah.
Yay, Florida.
How are you doing?
I was just there last week.
Oh, nice, nice. You catch any Burmese out in the Everglades?
No, but I would like to. I didn't have it in me the day that I was down south. I was too tired to drive around all night and look around, and it was a couple days too early. The weather was just coming out of a really cold, but it
all
wasn't
right,
really. Couple days later, I heard they caught a bunch, but the couple days I was there, when I was actually down there that day, some people looked and couldn't find any. But I don't think
we
they're too
wild
easy
everything.
To find.
Iguanas, tegus, everything's up.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's actually,
it is.
I, you know, it's funny is I used to go to Orlando. I used to go to the Daytona show in the back when it was in Orlando, and I'd take my kids in a canoe. I'd take them on a canoe trip, and we would, you know, gators and snapping turtles and giant gar. And yeah, it's awesome. I love Florida, to be honest. I like the fishing. I like the.
That's
you just
awesome.
Feel like you're in a tropical country. Because you are.
It is. It's nice.
Because it,
We are. You know, my question is, you know, I breed leopard geckos and the morphs and everything. I used to do that. The retics and even in the leopard geckos, all these genes, they just confuse me because is it something that was always locked in the wild caught ones, or is it just a thing from overbreeding that these genes are coming out? I know that you have how it all works and everything, of course.
Yeah,
but,
I can explain
you know,
that to you really good. So as leopard geckos go, the leopard geckos were randomly found in albino, but there was one line of leopard geckos that just came out albino. Boom, out came an albino. The thing is, we can't really say they just up and came out of it, because when you catch animals in the wild, we're learning now there's a lot of them that have markers. So what happens is, so we think, oh, well, we caught them and it just randomly happened in captivity. But what really happens is we put together two snakes that are carrying the gene. I do know for sure that I feel confident that there is one gene in reticulated pythons that randomly just showed up, and that's the Motley gene. Bob Clark had bred the snake. First of all, it's not a recessive gene, and so you either have it or you don't. Where the recessive genes, a lot, like genetic stripes, the first genetic stripes came from finding two snakes that had a unique pattern, put them together, they bred them, and out came genetic stripes. Like, whoa.
Okay,
and
that
was how they
sense.
Found it.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. And so,
they had
the
to find
inbreeding,
two random.
The inbreeding doesn't seem to be making many morphs at all. The reason why the snakes look so crazy, or the lizards or the geckos, is because they're being selectively bred, either just by looks, or and the other thing is by combining morphs. So these morphs are mutations, which is technically, if you really got technical, it's a gene that isn't normal. It could be for albinism. It's a lack of black pigment. You know, it's just broken.
Yeah.
Boom, gone, not there. And so the funny part is that even that gene, when you breed it to a normal, it reinherits its ability to see color, to have color on it again. And so, you could take one of these wild animals that's all got all kinds of color, find a truly normal animal and breed it again, and outbreed the gene as much as you can inbreed the gene, even though you'd be breeding them still in captivity. So it's like having different color stuff. And,
you know, I want to say, man, I watch your stuff on YouTube and on, man, you get so, it's so exciting to see somebody else, you know, you never know what you're going to get out of the egg. So
the reason why I don't know what's going to come out of the eggs is sometimes I breed at two snakes that I've been breeding reticulated pythons focused for over 20 years. So focused.
Yeah.
What I mean by focused is trying to create art. You could really say art, okay?
Yeah.
In real life,
yep.
The only thing different about them is the color. I mean, they're still a reticulated python. They still get the same size.
Yeah.
They just have a different paint job. And so
awesome.
When I'm doing this, I put all these genes, I'll start having a male that has, you know, four or five possibilities and a female that has four or five possibilities. And then when you start combining those, when there's super forms, albino forms, non-albino, sunfire, you can get all this variation of what you're going to get.
Yeah.
You may
awesome.
Miss the one you're trying for and get the one you thought you could never get because the odds are 1 in 64, 1 in, you know, 132, whatever. You know what I mean?
We don't have that, but we get the same thing. Yeah, man, 1 in 16, 1 in 8, 1 in 4, you
know
you never
how it
know.
Goes. And so The cool part is with reticulated pythons, they have so many eggs, it gives us the ability to hit the numbers.
Yeah, you get two.
When you're working with two eggs, man, when you're working with two eggs, baby, it's a long – when you get it, you're going to really be excited.
It's a long wait. It's a long wait, man. Well, hey, I don't want to take anybody else's time, but it's been a pleasure talking to you, man. Thanks for your
pleasure
your time,
talking
man.
To you, too,
very
and have
cool.
a great time
Kevin.
Out there in Florida.
Kevin, Kevin, before you leave, let me ask you something. What type of horse are you going after season for the leopard kills?
Man, you cut out just a little bit.
I said – okay. But what type of horse are you going after this season with the leopard geckos?
I like the tangerines, and I'm really going after Super Snows and some Diablo Blancos. But with the Diablo Blanco, I have a head, and when I'm breeding the regular when I'm bringing a Diablo Blanco with a head, like Jay said, I have so many possibilities, I don't even know what's going to pop out.
You might take you a few years to get them all.
Like a magic egg. Magic egg.
And going for a Super Snow Tremper. So that's my focus right now.
Awesome.
Right. Well, good luck. Best of luck to you this breeding season. And hopefully you'll call back in sometime soon.
I'm the same guy that won. I actually am the guy that won the leopard gecko from Imperial Super Giants last month.
Oh, Kevin. So no wonder you're working with the Diablo Blanco.
Congrats.
He's very much into that too. Yeah, congrats. How is she doing?
Oh, man, I'm surprised. She went from 36 grams to 62 in a month.
Woo! That's great. I'm so happy that you called back
great.
In. Yeah, good luck
man,
with
I'm
her.
I'm a listener, man. All right.
Okay.
Hey, thanks, man. This is a great show. This is a great show, by the way. Great guest, man. I was really interested. I thought it was going to be on last week, but it turned out
my bad.
No,
it was my bad. Everybody let me know that I was going to try to do it last week, but I just got was so buried I asked to bump it, so... Here we are.
Oh, that's cool. I saw your Instagram live pop up. That's how I'm on the show right now, actually. So
awesome. Sweet.
People, sure.
Thanks for following us. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care, Jay.
Thank you so
care.
Much, Kevin.
Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye. All right. We have another call on the queue. She's been waiting patiently for about 5 minutes now. So we're going to swing over to Emily all the way across the United States in California with you, Jay. Good evening, Emily. How are you doing?
I'm good. Actually, my name is Ellie. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Hi,
Ellie.
Ellie.
How are you doing, Ellie?
Hi. I'm doing really good. Thank you. How are you guys?
Excellent.
Oh,
how are you
good.
Doing?
Thanks for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. I had a question, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, so a bit of backstory first. My dad had a friend when he was in college who worked at some sort of pet store. It was an exotic and dangerous pet store. Obviously not a very legal one, as you can tell from the name. But he told me a story once. They had an accident. I think it was a lizard. I don't really remember correctly, but it was pretty dangerous, and it escaped in the store, and they couldn't find it for 2 weeks, and they had to shut down for 2 weeks. So that just made me think when I was watching your Instagram show, talking about questions, I wanted to know, has there been some sort of really catastrophic something that happened in the store like that where you guys were all freaking out? And I don't know. I just wanted to know.
I hope nothing like that could ever happen. we have some venomous in our zoo, but our venomous have like a fail-safe area to if they were to get out. It's snake proof. I guess if there was a bad enough earthquake, we could have a little problem, but we have actually emergency plan that we have all set up for to handle all that. We're working with the city and everybody else, but we have a state permit to do all that. So, you know, there is a reason why venomous snakes and different things have laws in California. And you know, one of the important things is if you have an exotic is that it could get out and mess up our environment. So, yes, nothing like that crazy, but I think we have that containment, you know, that kind of problem solved. By the state laws actually require certain things in order to even have animals certain ways, double lock, you know, two-layer locking and systems and all kinds of stuff. So.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean,
yeah.
I wouldn't wish that upon you guys.
Most hype on reptiles overrated in the first place, to be completely honest. I mean, you know, I seen some people that kind of criticized me because I released a video of a snake striking at me. And the reality of it is that's reality. And mm-hmm. I was fine. And the funny part, what people don't know about that video, if you go on my Facebook page and look at the video I uploaded before that video that was identical, I recorded that 2 minutes later. And I don't think I'd have recorded that 2 minutes later if it was the end of the world. And, you know, and that was about as bad as it gets. I mean, I put myself in an awkward situation because I wanted people to interact with their idea of their animals and their pets. And it just didn't go right. You know what I mean? It wasn't perfect. It didn't go right. And I was honestly scared to put it up. But because of it, because of that video, I was able to get on a lot of viral stations. I was able to get on TV, and they were able to tell the other side because they wanted to know, like, what made me click? Why would this guy do this? And because we've been on many pages with over a million followers and TV, I've been on TV on Right This Minute twice because of that connection that I had from that original one. We were on a science page that did a whole write-up about genetics, and it was only gotten because of that. And so there's been a lot of benefits to me not trying to, you know, pretend they never bite or something. And so there's always pros and there's always cons. But in real life, you know, reptiles aren't as dangerous. They want us to think they're, you know, as dangerous as a motorcycle or a skateboard or, I mean, we can get on all day and all the things that are much more dangerous. And I'm not suggesting that a 10-year-old kid should buy a 15-foot retic, even though at 14, at 13, I had a 14-foot retic, and don't ask me why I had it, but I had it, and don't ask me how I was able to have a wild-caught one that was teddy bear tame either, but I did, and it was just a weird situation. But we don't condone, you know, great big giant snake or big monitor. Big monitors, in some ways, are more dangerous than a small python, or I mean a large python, to be honest. Because they'll actually give you lacerations. But at the same time, you know, you don't buy a Rottweiler if you're not used to Rottweilers. And you don't, you know, you got to kind of know what you're doing and have a little experience. And you got to know the temperament of your animal. So we recommend buying young air animals and getting to know your animal. And of course, they don't all get that big either. That's the other myth in reptiles. I have giant pythons. I spent my whole life trying to have a giant python. You know what I mean? So people don't realize, they think they're going to go out and buy a reticulated python and it's going to all of a sudden be 20 feet. Never going to happen without super, super dedication of finding the right genetics, the right, you know, feeding them very diligently for many years. And so there's a lot to learn. A lot of people need to learn, a lot of learning that needs to be done. And the good part is, because of the stigma that comes with them, when you kind of, it's amazing to me how many phone calls I get of people that told me, I watch your stuff on Instagram, and now I'm not scared of snakes. And I think, Instagram's where I put all my crazy stuff to draw a crowd. And you think, and it has reverse action. I mean, it so amazes me. And I get somebody come in like every single week that tells me, I used to be deadly scared of snakes, and I want you to hold a snake right now. And it's because you love them. And you're not scared of them, so why? And you get in with big ones, and I want to hold the ball python right now. I want to hold a corn snake. I want to get over this thing, and I'm just so blown away that they get that want from seeing a big snake strike at me. So bizarre to me, but it works, and I'm down with it. And because of it, I have an amazing amount of great followers that love what I do, and I get to enjoy, you know, posting cool stuff and have interactions with them and meet them places. And I just think, you know, I like people and I like reptiles. And if I can get the two of them together in one place, it's even better.
Definitely.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling in, Emily. Hope you have a great day, and I hope you call in sometime soon.
It's not Emily.
Yeah,
what's your name again?
Ellie. I remembered this.
Ellie.
I'm so sorry.
I'm bad with names, but the only good part is if I.
I'm different.
The only good part is if you say your name and you say it, if it's said wrong the next time, usually I can catch it. But I can't remember a name for the life of me. So thanks for calling.
Thank you so much for calling.
All right. So we want to get into something since you brought up the. Oh, man, I had a brain fart. You brought up the idea of lizards and monitors. So you actually own, I'm not sure how many you own, but we all know what you're famous for.
Because I have a reptile zoo, we have a little bit of everything. We croc monitors, Asian water monitors, Nile monitors, Savannah monitors, Cape monitors, sand monitors, Argus monitors, you know. We got a bunch of monitors.
So,
green tree, black tree.
So your most famous one is Frank.
Famous monitor in the world and has ever been is Mr. Kipling. He's been on Disney Channel for about 6 years. He's been on two shows. One called Tanked is a current show that might be over by now. And then before was a show, Tanked. I don't know how I said that. Bunked. It's on a Disney show called Bunked, and I'm not sure if that's still going. We haven't recorded anything real recently, and then before then was Mr. Kipling on a show named Jesse, and that had, I think, 5 seasons, and it started out as Mr. Kipling, and I think there was I don't know the real reason, but they needed to change it to Mrs. Kipling, and funny enough, we were able to bring in two of my monitors, and they pretended that they were, I guess I can't say pretend. I don't want to ruin any kids' dreams. But the two of them, Mr. Kipling was on an airplane flight, and the plane crashed, and he got out and played in the jungle and met Bumblebee, which is one of our other great lizards. And when he got home, Mr. Kipling had laid eggs, so it was no longer Mr. Kipling. It was Mrs. Kipling. So sometimes the kids get really mad and I call them Mr. Kipling. They go, it's not Mr. Kipling, it's Mrs. Kipling. And I say, well, he's Mr. Kipling to me because I can't afford the therapy to convince him back. So,
yeah.
But he's about a 7-foot Asian water monitor. And he's getting old. He's captive born. He was born here at Prehistoric Pets, lives in the reptile zoo. And he's a cool lizard.
Wow. So how did he ever get onto the show? So
a company called a friend of mine and needed a big tame lizard because, you know, even though they don't really interact too close with the lizard, they still don't want, you know, an Asian water monitor out of the wild can be very aggressive. And because he's a captive raised, dog, tame, teddy bear, awesome lizard. that was the ideal situation because even though they don't get close to the kids too often, or should I say almost not at all, sometimes some of the kids were able to touch them after, but they, in the beginning, they were a little bit worried about it, of course, for insurance reasons, even though it's just back to the, everybody thinks everything's dangerous but at any extent, he wouldn't mess up their set. Because, I mean, what people don't realize, they have this big, beautiful set, right? Well, you get a monitor and he starts running across the set, he can, you know, throw things around, knock everything out of place, and now they have to reset it perfectly to use it again. Because it's like, you know, cut to cut. And so he's really pretty cool. And what the only thing we had to be careful of is we had to take him out about 15 minutes early, and they would tell us, okay, 15-minute warning, and we'd stick, his real name is Frank, we'd put Frank on the ground, and he would defecate, you know, because he'd want to mark his territory. So before every shoot, we had a 15-minute warning that we had to set him down and let him do his thing. And we actually, Disney was really good. They gave us enough money that we could bring an extra handler in so that there was somebody to pick him up from one from each side and one from the back so that he was, you know, carried really easily and set down really easily. So it was really, really great job. It worked out really well. Disney worked with us, really did a great job. I only did the filming when, Jules Sylvester actually did most of the filming, but sometimes he'd need a second animal or he'd be out of town. And I mean, sometimes I'd have my daughter do it. Sometimes I'd have me do it. Sometimes I had my other daughter do it, you know? So we shot a lot of, we've been to Disney a lot filming, but you know, it was a fun time.
That's pretty awesome. So Let me ask you something. How were you able to basically train a lizard, a worm?
Well, I mean, realistically, he isn't trained. He doesn't, you know, do a bunch of commands. He just does what you'd expect him to do. And so when they want you to do something, you just try to have him do what you would expect him to do. You know, if he had to do something and lift his head way up, I'd get a piece of chicken and we'd do different things, you know. Also, they had a puppet of him. They had a puppeteer that would actually control a fake tail that could make the tail wiggle and do everything he wanted to do. And they also had a, fake Frank. It's funny. It's the box that fake Frank. So they had a replica of him, and it was pretty awesome. They had a big, giant fake Frank. I should ask for that Frank. That'd be cool.
Definitely. Wow.
That would be really cool.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. So I know that he's been seen by so many different people, millions of people probably. So there is
More than that.
Of course. There are always those people that would, like, say, oh, man, I want me something like that. Or a little kid asking their parents, bugging their parents on Christmas, around Christmas time, asking for Mr. Kipling. So how do you respond to that if somebody approaches you or a parent approaches you and say, well, my son wants one of these? And, of course, not a lot of parents want a 8-foot to 10-foot monitor in their homes. But there are some parents out there that will. Maybe allow for that.
Well,
so how do you react to that?
We've sold plenty of Asian water monitors over the years. We just tell people, hey, this is what it's going to be. Here's what it's like, you know. And just like if you're going to buy a large dog, you need to know, hey, what size dog do I want, you know? So if you go buy, nobody thinks twice if you want a Cocker Spaniel or a Pit Bull or a Doberman Pinscher or a Great Dane or a Bull Mastiff. It's just up to the owners, you know. I would never want a Bull Mastiff, and they're great dogs, but it's like that's just too big for me to have something like that running around my house. You know what I mean? And so I like big snakes, but I don't like big dogs. But some people like little dogs, and everybody has a different taste, and I think that's part of what's nice is we can all be a little bit different. And I think the biggest problem we need to learn how is that even if we're different, we shouldn't act like we're different. We should just be different and accept everybody else for what they are. But we like to, if you're not like me, we like to throw rocks at you, and I don't like that. So, and that goes with either animals or personalities or style of anything, you know? So, but.
Yeah, that is definitely true in this day and age. So, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget that you can always call in. Jay has requested to let any questions slide, so he definitely is very open to a lot of things. So if you would like to call in, 713-955-0793. I think this broadcast is ending at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so that's around 26 minutes and 30 seconds left of this broadcast. So once again, that is 713-955-0793. Get those questions in. And ladies and gentlemen, we do have a request for you. Some of you guys might remember in our first season of ESR Live, in October we had Robin Marklin of Ship Your Reptiles and The Reptile Reporter on our show. And as all of you know, this is award season this year. February is, of course, award season. Oscars, Golden Globes, you know, all that good stuff. And Empire State Reptiles Live is nominated this year, surprisingly. I didn't actually see the post until a couple of days ago, so I've been pushing it a little slowly. But if you're interested in voting for your favorite radio show of the year or any other category, make sure you log on to www.reptile.com and click on that little button that says 2016 Best Achievement of the Year or whatever you want to see. I don't even know. Best Awards, that's what it's called. And scroll all the way down. One, and it's right there.
Better get a bucket,
Radio Clear and Empire State Reptiles. They're voting, making nominations and everything like that. You can vote as many times as you want, but only once per day. And the voting ends on February 20th, so make sure you get those. those votes in for your favorite reptile radio show. I won't be mad if it's not us. There are so many great radio shows in the running this year. So, Jay, I want to jump back into you. So I want to ask you something. How do you feel about the care of the retics that you have? What is one thing that you would recommend to somebody that's trying to get into retics? Jay, are you there? All right. He looks like he has dropped. The call has dropped. I'm not sure. But we're going to take this call. It might be him. So let's see what this call will be. Good evening. Welcome to ESR Live.
It's me.
Hey, you're playing tricks on us, man.
We had this wonderful thing called a power outage for a minute. I went on the landline thinking that'd be the safe way to not lose power, not to have a problem. Technology,
man.
Right?
Right? Definitely. It's a pain in the
butt
every single day.
It's funny. Wow. We're having a storm, and I don't know why the power's been so unstable lately. But here we are.
Yeah. So I want to jump in and ask you, what are some words of advice that you would give somebody that's trying to get into retics? Or what is something, a mistake that a lot of people make very often when trying to get into retics?
I don't know. I think that I don't know if there's a lot of mistakes. I think that one thing that you always want to do, a lot of people call me up and say, what more should I buy? And I think to myself, to be completely honest, if you're buying it and you don't know which one you want, it's maybe not the best time to buy a snake. you should have a passion,
no
a desire.
No need to cut you off, but we do have another caller that's been waiting for a
excellent.
Little while. And
excellent.
So, 619, didn't screen you yet, so we're going to jump into you. Good evening. 619, what's your name and where you're calling from? Hi. What's your name and where you're calling from? I hear your GPS. Hello?
You're close. You're close to prehistoric pets, whoever you are.
All right, so 619. Is the connection established?
Chris Lowe got the biggest one.
All right, so 619, give us a call back when I guess you're ready. So we're going to go ahead and cancel the call real quick. 619, last call. All right, so guess they did not hear us. So, back to what you were talking a little bit about.
Yeah, I was just saying, I think it's real important to buy something that you absolutely enjoy and love. And so I always tell, because I think passion is the reason why you should get into reptiles. If you're, I don't think you should go into reptiles to try to get rich or make a bunch of money. Or,
oh, here they go again. So sorry to cut you off again. Here they go.
Yeah, let's
get
see.
Him on here. Hi, 619, what's your name and where are you calling from? Hello? 6-1.
How
yes,
you doing?
What's your name and where are you calling from?
Bree.
Bree, hi. How are you, Bree?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing excellent.
Great.
So what's your question, Bree?
Sorry, what?
I said, what is your question?
What's your question?
Come on now. Don't be shy. They won't bite. We have them under control over here.
I guess how long does the boa live?
How long does a boa live? Boas can live it depends on the different species. I would say, a common length is about 20 years old. But it would probably depend on exactly, they can live up to 30. There's, different species are going to live. I'm sure some of the dwarf boas might live a little longer than some of the real large boas. But 20 to 30 years, 20 years would be a long life, but they say they can live as long as 30.
Wow. thanks for waving to me about 5 minutes ago.
You were here? Oh, man.
Oh,
I waved at you. You know what? Yeah, so I actually asked my daughter to come out and wave you down and see if you were still here to tell you that I'll be out in a few minutes. Thanks for coming. We appreciate you visiting
you.
Us.
I love it.
I wish I had a couple more minutes to when, but I was on this phone call, as you knew, and I'm glad you called.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. We really enjoyed your company.
Bye.
No problem. For the rest of the day.
Take care. So that's one of the cool excitements about doing what I get to do. You just firsthand experience. Normally I would have went out and greeted them, but I was on this phone call. So, you know, we're still trying to be diplomatic. My daughter opened the door and I gave him a wave. So he was saying, thanks for waving at him. And I get to really meet amazing people from all over the earth.
Definitely.
That come, they fly in all year long. And I mean, it's some, like he's in California. He said 619, that's San Diego. And, so they come, you know, that's an hour and a half drive. Not as big a deal as some people come, but people come from everywhere, and it's really nice to meet all these people that love reptiles, that love what I'm doing, and get to enjoy it and get a firsthand, you know, get to see stuff, and it's really, really cool. And I think that the reptile community needs to talk about that a lot, because that's really what makes us great. Yeah, I mean, we have something that a lot of things that people don't have. We have something that everybody's interested in. They could be scared of it, but they're still interested in it. You know what I mean? They can look at it and be scared to death, but they still have interest in it. Where instead of looking at the negative side of what it all is, we need to look at more at the positive side and share the part that we, each individual, likes the most. And if we get that message out, the reptile community would be so great. If we just all you got to do is whatever part of it you like, just share that part of it with all your friends. And I think that's the most important thing. You know, being different doesn't make you anything special. It doesn't matter if you're the biggest breeder or the smallest breeder, because the smallest breeder has just as much passion as a big breeder. And somehow some people think the big breeders are better or the small people are better. And really the truth is we're all the same. We're all just doing something we love passionately. And just like a talk radio show. What an opportunity to get good people on that love what they do. You know what I mean? And I just think that, if you want the best show, get people who love what they love and talk about what they love.
that's definitely true.
Yeah, I mean, because you know what? Hype sells. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, negativity sells. But really, really, that's not what we're all about. Hopefully, that's not the main objective. When bad things happen, you try to make the best out of them. But to share the best part of it is the best part of being able to do any hobby that you love. You know, whether it be dogs, cats, lizards, snakes, geckos. Like we had a caller that loves his geckos. I mean, that guy obviously, I mean, he weighed in his geckos, knew the exact how much his gecko that he had gotten a month before had gained weight.
Dedication.
I mean, how? Absolutely. And you don't get dedication without love. Love comes from dedication, and dedication comes from love. And so I just think sometimes people get doing it for so long they forget why they do it, and they get in a competitive mode. And, you know, I got to be bigger. I got to have better. And the truth is, if somebody has a normal pair of leopard geckos and they breed them and they have a baby, they are just having a great time, and it's no different than having one that had five morphs in it. The only difference is for them it was a first, and for the person who has the five morph snake hatch or five morph gecko hatch, it's their first. So they get a read. So one of the things that drives me is hatching a first all the time. That's fun. I enjoy it. Why be negative about that? You know what I mean? But somehow people have a tendency of being over negative about everything. And our society, I mean, geez, look at this last election. Talk about politics. Oh, my goodness. What a divided country we were before that. We aren't going to go very far there. Don't worry. We're not going very far. But, man, we all need to get back together. We the people. So,
yes.
Anyway, I think that's the thing that I'd like to say about for all of us is that we really appreciate each other for our love for our animals and our reptiles. And that's a great note to me. Do we have any more callers?
Not right now, but everybody knows the number, 713-955-0793. I hope you guys know that we have 14 minutes and 30 seconds left. So if you have an urgent question, if you have a question that you think is stupid, nobody can make a bigger fool of themselves on air but me. So make sure you call in 713-955-0793, and we promise we'll be nice. We won't bite. So since you've been in the hobby and you've been in the reptile community for such a long time, have you seen a change in recent years, or have you seen an influx in things or a decrease in things?
I can say when it was in its infant stage, it was 95% positive or higher. And I would say now it's not as positive because I think there's just a little bit of either competitive or jealous or, you know, everybody's trying to control each other. You shouldn't do that. People that think they're the police. And I think we should just all, like I said, that's the biggest thing I've seen change. Of course, I've seen a lot of availability become. When I first started, there was no animals. There was nothing. There was no – everything was – I mean, I went to a symposium, and a zoo symposium, and it was just like nobody knew how to breed snakes. And so we've come so far. It's really great. Now we're breeding everything. I mean, it's like this – we're learning how to give the animals what they love so that they can actually fulfill what they're meant to do, just how, you know, populate, you know. And so it's kind of fun watching, you know, people break the code, how to breed this and break the code and how to breed that. And the genetics are just a second layer on it. You know what I mean? Like I said, I'm not really that guy that thinks that, you know, it's no harder to breed a snake with genes or without genes. If you breed two normals, you're just as successful as somebody breeding a 25 gene snake if they ever make one. You know what I mean?
Of course.
It's still love and passion.
Yeah, so jumping back into breeding, what are you working with now? What is your favorite Morphin? What is your favorite Morph? What are you working with now?
I don't have a favorite Morph. There's too many of them. It would be impossible. I'm real excited about Rogue One It's just a – yeah, we named him Rogue One because I didn't want to name it Stormtrooper because there was already a Stormtrooper ball. And so he's kind of Rogue One, a Stormtrooper, but he's a black and white snake that was born. It's called a cow, and eventually they're supposed to get black spots on it. Well, this one was born with great big black blotches, and it's just an incredible looking snake. So he's in my top tenner section. But I have another big snake called Juliet that I named it. She's a platinum. She's like a 20 foot plus platinum tiger. Citron, that's a real famous snake I have that I like. I say it's famous just because we use it. It's on our Facebook page, and it's got 8.5 million or 8.9 million. I don't even know how my daughter looked by her hair. But, you know, it's got a bunch of views. And
really cool.
Of course, yeah, so it's kind of neat that, you know, it's nice to have stuff go viral. And it's even better if it goes viral and it's not negative. You know what I mean? So it's pretty impressive. So here's the reality of it. On my page, the video everybody freaks out of has 1.5 million views. I say everybody, but it's really like 5% of – not even 5%. I've heard from that, but it's just a handful of people. But it has like 1.5 – I have to look. It might have more than 1.5 million views. But then – another, because I did put up that video that everybody was concerned about, Unilad, however it said Utilade or Lad or whatever, it's not very good with names, but Utilad, they picked up that video and then decided they liked my stuff, and then they put up that other video. It's got 8.5 million views on my page, and I think it's got 40 million views on their page. And so,
wow.
You know, the connections are incredible, and I couldn't get more excited than to think that people are seeing all that positive. I was on a show called Right This Minute where a snake was kind of striking at me, and I was pulling her eggs, and she never bit me. And the guy that was interviewing, you know, like not interviewing, but he was telling already what was happening. He goes, "We're familiar with Jay." You know, it's a nice, big, long segment. You know, and he's talking about, you know, notes. You know, he's explaining that the snakes do better in an incubator, and he's explaining that the clutch comes connected as I pulled the clutch of eggs out. You know, and it was fun to listen to him. He had obviously watched some of my stuff to learn what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And so here we got this guy teaching snake husbandry right on TV. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking, the only thing he said that I didn't like is he said, well, he's kind of using the putter to kind of, you know, keep her from getting them. You know what I mean? And if you use the word putter in the course of a snake hook, you know. But at the end of the day, you know, even on the first show when they put up the negative one, on the negative one, I don't think there's any post anywhere in the world that has more photos of people with their pets. And they have their pet snakes, their pet lizards, and their favorite reptile.
Wow.
It's just days and days and days of people putting up pictures of their pets. So that really fun being part of something that's, you know, bigger than the industry, you could say. You know what I mean? I'm going beyond the industry, and I love it. And I love the idea that people want to be taught about reptiles and learn more. And I, you know, trigger their instinct to wonder, like, you know, what's up with this guy? And, it, you know, I'm getting a lot of famous people get to come to the store and want to interact with. I had a Dwight, Dwight Howard here just 2 days ago.
Wow, Dwight Howard.
He loves snakes. Yeah, I mean, big boy, right? And literally,
yes.
six foot 11 inches tall, you know, famous basketball player.
Well,
and he was here, and I wrapped him up with a bunch of snakes, and he had a great time, you know. And we have we've had a guy that's real good on the internet, Logan Paul, came down. We had Snake Bites TV brought him, and, you know, Brian Barczyk down here. And there's just a lot of media getting out in places that nobody would ever know that anything about reptiles, and they eventually they feed in, they follow us. Before you know it, they're learning all kinds of stuff about reptiles that they didn't even know, and it all happens from different reasons than we would expect. So it's really cool, and I'm having a good time, and I'm really about breeding the reticulated pythons. But like I said, we've done about everything imaginable. I'm in my zoo right now, walking around looking at a great big albino western rattle, you know, diamondback, and baby sulcatas to let's see here, albino oriental rat snake, which is really rare, to speckled kings, to gila monsters, to beaded lizards, to hognose. I'm just looking at one little section, Madagascar hognose, there's everything, gray bands. That's just one little wall, diamond python, jungle carpet. So that's just one little tiny piece of the shop. I turned another way, there's an Eldabra, an albino water monitor, a Burmese python, American alligator, Jamaican bow, not Jamaicans, but I can't think right now what they are. But a little bit of everything, you know, yellow anacondas, giant snapping turtle. I don't know if you've seen that, but he's pretty cool. It's fun doing all this, and I really appreciate everybody that is following us at the Prehistoric Pets and the Reptile Zoo and my personal page. And hopefully you're following this radio show, and hopefully he's going to get some really good people to keep coming on here and keep it going. And hopefully you guys will share stuff and have a good time. And,
yeah, of course.
Call in on the show everything you can, because it's not always easy to be able to stop in the middle of the day to call. Of course, California, it's like everybody's still at work, but gotta record it at some point, right?
Yeah, that's true. So what seems to be some words of advice I should give somebody if they want to jump into breeding, but even keeping
I think the most important thing is to start small and and work your way into what you really want. Even if you want to become a breeder, well, I think, well, keep your day job and start experiment. Grab your cup, you know, get a pair or a trio or a couple pairs of your favorite lizards, snakes, or turtles, or tortoises, or geckos, or spiders, or whatever you're going to mess with, and just start enjoying what you're doing, and you know, see where it takes you. And if you really got what it takes, you're gonna, you know, you're gonna have a passion that's gonna drive you over the bumps, because there will be bumps.
Yes.
Grab two animals, put them together, and everything works out right. You got to learn, you know, how to keep them correctly, what temperatures they need. You got to get, you know, there's so much to learn that it's sometimes there's so much to learn. You're so busy, you have to unlearn half of it, because some of it you learn, it just isn't the right way. I mean, I had to learn from everybody, and then I had to unlearn about 80% of it, to be completely honest, before I was ever really successful. So, you know, if you're lucky enough to be mentored by somebody that's successful, try to pay attention, because it takes a while to be successful sometimes. Some animals are easier than others to deal with. You know, some people want to start with really hard animals to breed, and there's nothing wrong with starting with a hard animal to breed, long as you're not in it just to breed animals, because you might be disappointed and you might get tired of them and want to get rid of them. But if you're in it because you love it, then it won't matter if they breed or don't breed, you know?
Yeah.
And that makes it fun, and doesn't matter what the market's going up, going down. It doesn't matter. It just is what it is. A lot of people got out of the retics when we started having struggles with the federal government, and they had people call me and say, should I invest in retics? And I said, if you're not doing it because you love it, you shouldn't invest in it, even if there is no law, because you're going to get tired of the hard work, and you're going to get tired of, you know, taking care of everything. And it's not, you don't just breed them and sell them all in 10 minutes. You're going to, you know, it's going to take you all year to sell your babies, and you know, you want to get good homes and everything. So nothing's easy in life. I mean, nothing good's easy. And breeding snakes or lizards or geckos or whatever, no exception. So
yes,
I watch a lot of little kids breed geckos, and they have to do shows to sell them, and, you know, go make pages on the internet, and they do well, and it's fun, and it's educational, and it really teaches you responsibility. And I think it's great. I think animals are just so much cooler than iPads and, you know, video games. And I think that's one of the things that people, it's nice to see people realize that when they come in, because they're like, wow, this is really cool. So I get to see a lot of excited kids and a lot of excited people that truly enjoy the animals. And I think it's because they realize it's real and it's not just an internet game, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of nice.
Yeah, we just got a message from somebody in our Instagram direct message who asked us to ask this question on live air because they're unable to call in. They are talking a little bit about some, I would say some discomfort some people have, and they're a little worried about keeping a lot of snakes in one bin at a specific point in time, and I know even you stated
snakes
it,
in what?
You've seen snakes in a bin at a lot of different snakes in a bin at one time.
Yeah, we don't. Most of 95% of we do prefer all our snakes to live alone, except during breeding. I do have a couple display cages where I'll put in like boas. Usually, I colony breed in general. So boas, for instance, we might have 6 or 8, 10 boas in an enclosure. And so a lot of times people don't realize that they like to hang out with each other, so they're always together. The other end, of course, is empty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they're breeding, they're doing their things, their pheromones going off. But we pretty much keep most of our breeding stock in real life, except in the zoo, in individual caging. But on display, we don't mind them living together, because it's not about breeding. Breeding is more successful if you keep them separate and you introduce them and do the thing. But on our boas, we just let them do it naturally, and we kind of let them, if they want to, they want to. We don't try to quite as much. Like if you're trying to breed them, you usually feed them real heavy for a certain time of year and then put the male in, and you kind of use different things to stimulate them. We just kind of feed them all, keep them all healthy, and let them do their thing naturally. It's not quite as successful because, you know, sometimes they just don't get as much. They get enough food to stay perfectly healthy, but they need, in order to breed, they need, like, extra food. I mean, they need to have, they need to be, like, so I get criticized sometimes real heavy. Oh, your snakes are too fat. Well, if you notice, my snakes lay eggs. You know what I mean? And people understand that. And so, to be honest, some of the snakes we purposely don't overfeed because we don't want people complaining. But you can't keep the complaints to zero. It's impossible because everybody's a professional, and they don't really. But that doesn't necessarily really know how to do it. So it's but yes, we do keep boas together. But everything else, all our other breeding stock is only together for short periods of time to time. Like, we actually breed our reticulated pythons. In 99.9% of the cases, we usually try not to leave the male in for more than like 48 hours. We put him in his own enclosure, let him do his own thing, because we want him to always want to be with the female, you know? So that's always like a good thing. When he goes in with a female, he gets to do what he wants to do. He's happy. But on our anacondas, you know, they hang out together and breed together and do their own thing together. A little bit different situation. And we get babies every year that we really put the female up to weight, like make her kind of look a little bit overweight. But right. That's just the way she looks, because that's required.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Where can people find you? Where is Prehistoric Pets located, and where can people connect with you?
Yeah, well, we got Instagram. It's actually, I just wrote J@Prehistoric Pets, but it comes up as Prehistoric Pets also.
Okay.
We have a Instagram also, the Reptile Zoo, FV. We hope to get that FV dropped off, but we have to get a hold of Instagram to do it. Might not be easy. We also have a YouTube channel, Prehistoric Pets TV. We're going to be putting up a lot of videos coming up soon. We got a decent amount of followers over there, but boy, we never have enough, never have too many. Because it's always fun to have people following us, because it's fun to share our stuff, because we love what we do and we love to share what we love. So,
of course,
we have Facebook, and that's also Prehistoric Pets. And then my personal page is just, you know, J-A-Y Brewer, which is just real simple. And
all right.
Yeah. So
all right.
I try to answer all my messages. It sounds crazy, but I answer a lot of messages on Prehistoric Pets.
Definitely,
that's kinda,
I can tell.
Yeah, I take care of Instagram myself, so I try real hard to answer that. Yeah, and my Snapchat too, but I'm not a big Snapchat guy, but I do it anyway.
You gotta please.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking so much time out of your busy day to sit down and talk with us.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
Connected with your fans, as our mission states. So we hope to have you back on the show sometime soon.
Sounds good. And keep up the good work. Find some great people who love what they love. And everybody out there, follow them.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much.
Take care.
We really do
appreciate
great, it. Take care.
Have a great evening.
You too. Bye. Well, folks, that simply does it for us for tonight. I'm actually about to jump in the car and head to a President's Day party. So, I gotta go. So, I want to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for listening for tonight's show. And make sure you vote for your favorite reptile radio show of the year. It'll mean so much to us if you vote for us. But, you know, it's okay if you don't vote for us. But that's at www.thereptilereport.com. And there are some prompts over there where you can find your way to the place to vote. We thank you so much, and don't forget to tune in next week. We'll be talking to John Norris, who's the nephew of Chuck Norris. We established that last time he was on the show. We're going to be talking about all things saltwater and marine life and marine life preservation and all that good stuff. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in to Empire State Reptiles Live. We'll be back here next week at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, our regular time, which is Saturday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, even though I said that already. What's up?
In my boat, they all be jumping. Keep up. Players only.